Hi. As the name of the podcast suggests, I connect a lot of topics together in the service of growing the practice of psychotherapy. As the number of episodes grows, it occurred to me that I could offer you a way to organize the episodes. So I've created playlists. Playlists are compilations of all the episodes on one topic. If you'd like to try this out, there is a link in the show notes to the playlist page, where you will find the categories, and then you click on the category you're interested in, and you'll see all the episodes on that topic. I hope you enjoy it. While you're there, you could sign up for the newsletter if you like. Those come out weekly and are a great way for us to stay in touch, and for you to keep up to date about the podcast and additional events. Hello, and thank you for joining the Connection Therapy Podcast. This is a podcast about the craft of psychotherapy, and we seek to support those who strive to improve their craft by sharing research about the science and stories about the art of psychology. Together, we will explore these findings so you can decide how you want to apply them to benefit your practice. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I am continuing the exploration that I started last year in asking for your consideration about the importance of eye contact to mental health. And in this episode, I am happy to say that we are going to consider eye contact from a human point of view as well as horses and dogs. Eye contact is important to human development, and it is also part of social play behavior between dogs, as Mark Beckoff pointed out. For reference, I mentioned these topics in episodes 7 and 8. And in the time since I started bringing this up last year, I think it's clear and remains clear and probably always will be clear that one of the first things we have to acknowledge is how difficult it is to determine nonverbal signals being transferred at all, and let alone across species. In fact, I think, to be honest, it's important to note that it is hard to understand what other humans are communicating, even when we have all the verbal and nonverbal signals we can obtain, let alone reducing a form of communication to one facial feature. And that would be a really good point to remember as we go through this exploration, because a lot of what we're going to do is consider everything in context, of course, much like we do when we're communicating with other humans. And yet, to me, these two things in tandem are some of the big reasons why we must start studying this in more detail, especially as mental health professionals. Now that we know and have been continually reminded of the importance of eye contact, and also anyone interested in improving relationships overall with loved ones, be they humans, dogs, horses, and more, that's why we need to start studying more about how this works so that we can be better prepared to improve our relationships and, as mental health therapists, improve our interventions in our practices. So I will continue to share research here. I have a couple studies to share with you, and that will allow you to consider if and how they apply to your work, and hopefully see some benefits of just becoming more aware of these topics, then even considering from there how you might intervene differently as a result. So, continuing our exploration with that caution, I have two studies to share with you today. The first is from a journal called Applied Animal Behavior Science, and the first three authors are Walsh, Mears, and Samuels. It was published last year in 2024 and is entitled Human-Dog Communication: How Body Language and Nonverbal Cues Are Key to Clarity in Dog-Directed Play, Petting, and Hugging Behavior by Humans. As always, we'll have links in the show notes for this episode, as well as on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. This is already one of my favorite articles for a variety of reasons. The design is really elegant. I'll explain that in a minute. And also because of the conclusions. I'll give you the conclusions off the top so we can kind of work backwards to understand how they arrived at them. Essentially, they are reminding us that human behaviors, such as hugging and the way we pet dogs and play with them, can actually affect dogs negatively. What? I know. Let me explain. So, especially hugging, that is such a non-natural thing for dogs. I don't know if you've ever tried to hug a dog. Please don't, especially if it's a dog that you don't know. In fact, that's one thing they talk about here is, especially when the dog is not aware of the human doing these behaviors, it can actually lead the dog to defend itself because some of our natural human affiliation behaviors are just non-natural for dogs. And so they go on to explain how they figured this out. And what the elegant design here that I really appreciate is they took videos off of video sharing platforms and scored them for the behaviors that they saw in the humans and the dogs. And in case it's not clear, video sharing platforms are those things that many people share now. So this is a side note public service announcement to always remember what you put on the internet, because now there are researchers like these folks and myself who are going to take those publicly available videos and make conclusions from them. So note to self. In this study, though, what is helpful is they are seeing the humans initiate some behaviors that are what humans do when we want to affiliate or become close or show affection for, in this case, the dogs. And what they observed is that some of these things in dogs can cause, quote, feelings of discomfort, anxiety, fear, distress, and confusion, which actually may harm the bond between the humans and the dogs, much like it does in human-to-human relationships when there's a severe miscommunication, especially when somebody's at a vulnerable point, then we need to repair the bond. And what I really appreciated here is they are reminding us how important it is that we start learning about our animal counterparts' typical ways of signaling when they're stressed or when they're relaxed, so that when we make behaviors toward them, we can determine by observing their reaction if that seems to be settling them or alarming them. And having worked with a therapy dog myself in a couple different ways, I can say for sure that this is something that's really hard to understand at first, because it's just so natural that we would think that, you know, because we like a hug, maybe the dog would as well. And some dogs do like to be hugged. Like I say, especially this article suggests when it's a human that they know. But I think it has to do, for me, it has to do with the relative size difference, which is why it's not as welcome from dogs as it may be from humans. And, you know, in my work, I've met many people who've had negative reactions to being hugged. I have awareness of many people who likewise don't feel comfortable with human hugs. And so it's just really important that we start being able to have not only the ability to read the nonverbal signals in our friends and loved ones, be they humans and or otherwise. I think it's important that we start making space for there to be individual differences here within species and across species. And the second article follows on this awareness of being aware of our dog's needs, be they pets, or in the second article, if they are partners in therapeutic work via animal-assisted interventions. And this research has multiple authors as well, so I'll list the first three, and they are Cavalli, Carballo, and Zeke. And this article is entitled Gazing as a Help Requesting Behavior. So Gazing as a Help Requesting Behavior, a comparisons of dogs participating in animal-assisted interventions and pet dogs, published in a journal called Animal Cognition in 2020. So what they did is they taught the dogs that a human would respond with help when the dog wanted to have some food that was not available to them. So like they were aware the food existed in the experiment, but they call it an unsolvable task where the dog could not obtain the food without the assistance of the human. And so you might be asking yourself, like, why do they train a dog to do an unsolvable task? Well, in this case, they are training the dogs to do that so that they can see how the dogs respond when they need help. And what happened was the dogs that had experience in animal-assisted interventions spent a lot more time gazing at the human in the experiment, as well as alternating their gaze more frequently between the container of food and the people. And they did this, the dogs who have experience in animal-assisted interventions did this significantly more than the pet dogs that were in the experiment. And of course, as we mentioned at the onset of this episode, we have to take this with high levels of caution in our interpretations. But what these authors say is, quote, "These results suggest that gazing may be a significant communicative response in the animal-assisted intervention dogs, which could probably contribute to having a better coordination with their handler." So these dogs who had experience in animal-assisted interventions, they're surmising may have had experience in gazing at the humans as part of those experiences in order to receive support. And this is what I really want to highlight here. I mentioned it in earlier episodes, specifically number 11. It is my experience that horses also have a response to what is around them that can be demonstrated in their eyes. And as people who work either with dogs or with horses in animal-assisted interventions, we need to really ensure we are continuing to look to our counterparts' eyes in those interactions so that we know if they are signaling anything to us. I'll be sharing some more information about the potential of how this works in horses in future episodes, but this article clearly shows a difference between pet dogs and dogs who've had experience in animal-assisted interventions, and they're showing that the gaze toward the human is more prevalent in the dogs who've had experience in animal-assisted interventions. So what I'm suggesting here and trying to underscore from what these authors found is that if we are going to ask animals to partner with us in animal-assisted interventions, I think it's incumbent upon us to also educate ourselves as much as we can and stay continually curious about how they will communicate to us what they need in those situations when they need help, and, you know, just their own experience of participating in these interventions alongside us. So, as always, appreciate you being with me as we explore these things and looking forward to future explorations. Thanks. I hope you'll join us again for future explorations in the field of psychology. And if you'd like to take a step further, there are additional ways to obtain more education and support on our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com. While there, you will find information about the authors and studies featured in the podcast episodes. Also, you will see a schedule of live trainings I offer on the topics featured in the podcast. And you will find information about the Connection Community, a growing group of mental health clinicians dedicated to the study and practice of psychotherapy. Please check out our website, connectiontherapypodcast.com, to learn more. Thanks. Until next time.